What is up, beautiful people? Can you believe that the holiday season is already finito? Oh my goodness, this is actually our very first current sports show of the new year. Welcome to the show. I am your host, Al Martin. Hope you had a great holiday break with Christmas and, of course, New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. It's time to get back to business, though. We have a jam-packed show for you all, as we will be recapping, of course, the Michigan State Cotton Bowl loss to Alabama. Pretty ugly last week, folks. Isaac Constance, our current sports engineer, himself and I, we were both out there at Arlington, in Arlington, Texas, I should say, at AT&T Stadium where the Dallas Cowboys play. Such a great atmosphere, but such an ugly result. We'll recap what we covered out there, so you don't want to miss that. We'll also break down the game itself. We'll also chat about the MSU men's basketball team, as now they do have an edge in that loss column. Just one loss on the year, though. They sit at 14-1. They got that loss at the hands of Iowa on the road, but they moved on from that and got a dub against Minnesota. We'll talk about them. Also recount the NFL playoff picture. And get this, Isaac Constance will actually join us from New Orleans. He still has a week off, but amidst, of course, his time in New Orleans, enjoying time with family and friends out there, he'll chat with me for 10 or 15 minutes or so to talk about his time out in Dallas and to give his thoughts on the MSU men's basketball team and so much more. Of course, we will also take your calls. But hey, you know what's next. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this January 4th. All right, folks. Well, let's start with the MSU women's basketball team. Ariel Powers, she scored 21 points and grabbed 12 rebounds. Jasmine Hines added 15 points. And the number 24 Michigan State women's basketball team turned back Wisconsin on Sunday. Tori Jankowska added 14 points and 7 assists. And Brandy Agee had 11 points, 5 steals, and 4 assists for the Spartans, who are now 10-3, 1-1 in Big Ten play. They were also perfect on 9 free throws in the fourth quarter. The game turned in the second quarter when the Spartans closed the half with a 15-3 run for a 39-24 lead. The team now returns to the road to take on Penn State this Thursday at 7 p.m. MSU senior guard and National Player of the Year prospect Denzel Valentine says he hopes to be ready for this Thursday's matchup when the MSU men's basketball team plays host to Illinois in the Big Ten home opener. The team currently sits at 14-1 on the year. Valentine had arthroscopic knee surgery on December 21st and missed his third straight game. Grinding 69-61 win over Minnesota at Williams Arena, the Barn. We'll talk about that game as well. Keep it locked. Jim Harbaugh, he broke out the Twitter fingers on Sunday night, shortly after the San Francisco 49ers announced that they will be relieving Jim Tom Sula of his head coaching duties. Harbaugh appeared to take a shot at both his former team and assistant coach. He tweeted, quote, "Do not be deceived. You will reap what you sow," end quote. Yeah, interesting stuff. All right. A year after Michigan retired its famed football jerseys, adding Desmond Howard's number 21 to the group, it appears that Charles Woodson's number 2 will remain in circulation. Freshman receiver Amir Mitchell, enrolling early and beginning classes this week at U of M, tweeted last night that he will wear number 2 next season. He tweeted, quote, "I completely understand the challenge of wearing number 2 brings at the University of Michigan. As the GOAT, which means greatest of all time, Charles Woodson once wore, and I accept." Yeah, that comes with a lot of pressure, kid. All right, the Detroit Lions finished their season with a 24-20 win on the road yesterday against the Chicago Bears. That marked 3 straight wins to the end of the year, dating back to a December 21st win on the road against the New Orleans Saints. They finished the year 7-9 after starting the year 1-7. Ugh. There are now many decisions to make when it comes to player personnel, GM decisions, and whether or not they will keep head coach Jim Caldwell for another season. We'll also chat about the Lions and Jets a sec as well. All right, with week 17 now in the books, the NFL world now sets its eyes on the playoffs. here is how the picture looks. In the NFC, from 1 through 6, in this order, the Carolina Panthers, Arizona Cardinals, Minnesota Vikings, Washington Redskins, you like that? How about Kirk Cousins, huh? The Green Bay Packers and the Seattle Seahawks. In the AFC again, in numerical order from 1 through 6, the Denver Broncos, New England Patriots, Cincinnati Bengals, Houston Texans, Kansas City Chiefs, and the Pittsburgh Steelers. We'll give you guys a playoff preview also later on in the show. And speaking of Kirk Cousins, who is a former Spartan, he continued his resurgent season by setting Washington's single-season passing yards mark. Cousins tossed 3 scoring passes in the first quarter against, my Dallas Cowboys on Sunday in a 34-23 win. The NFC East champs' 4th straight dub. Before leaving late in the first half, Cousins threw for 176 yards to finish with 4,166 passing yards, breaking Jay Schroeder's franchise record of 4,109 set back in 1986. And tonight, both the Detroit Red Wings and the Detroit Pistons are in action. The Wings will hit the road as they take on the New Jersey Devils. Puck drop is at 7 p.m. And the Detroit Pistons will play host to the Orlando Magic at 7:30. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and be a part of the show, you know that number. Just dial 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Without further ado, let the show begin. There were no smiling faces as the confetti rained down from the rafters. No, there were no dances in the locker room or any last-minute heroics from the Spartans that led to an are-you-kidding-me moment. Just shock and realization that this is how high the Spartans would reach. Reminiscent of that 2011 game against Alabama. Deja vu, to say the least.
I wasn't there at that moment, a particular moment, but, you know, this has kind of been the hardest loss that I've taken, and you know, the reality is that, you know, our foundation has been laid. You know, we're going to continue to build and watch Michigan State grow.
You know, I know in my senior year, lost a state title 42-3, so it's kind of a thing for me, I guess. I don't know, but it hurt then and it hurts now. But you know, it propels you to the next step of your life. You know, it's a little bit of a reminder each day you go out and work for the next phase of your life.
Losing like this is just not a normal feeling. It just got me feeling all type of not explaining exactly.
What hurts the most?
Just losing 38-0. That's embarrassing to me.
Well, you know, once we got here, we obviously, you know, wanted to go for a national championship. But, you know, this season, we were Big Ten champions, you know, got to this playoff for the first time. So I think this whole offseason, we'll just continue to preach that we need to get to that next step again. And, you know, that's going to the national championship and winning it.
We're one of the 4 best teams in the country, regardless of what they want to say. We were there and they weren't. And this season is a success, and I think after a loss like that, you can't take one game and forget about the other 13 games that we played.
What statement do you think this program made this year?
Sooner or later, people got to stop just counting us out. I mean, I guess you could say today was, you know, kind of goes against that, but, you know, I feel like we came out and we played hard early.
We made the playoffs, and we pride ourselves on being a resilient team, and we'll take and learn from this.
Is this season still a success in your guys' eyes, in your eyes?
No. Our season was to get it all. Like I said earlier in the season, I want it all, and we ain't get it all, so we ain't accomplished nothing in my eye, you ask me.
But without a woman, I'm a girl. wheels over the rolls. Man made the train carry the heavy load. Man made the electric light take us out of the dark. Man made a boat for the water like Noah made the ark. This is a man's world, but it wouldn't be nothing, nothing without a woman or a girl.
Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. Thank you, James Brown, for that lovely intro. I am your host, Al Martin. Happy New Year, beautiful people. It is January 4th, 2016, the very first Current Sports of the new year. It feels good to be back. I want to start the show by saying that, of course, we took 2 weeks off. We've been hitting you with best of shows throughout these past 2 weeks due to, of course, Christmas and New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. But now I'm back in the saddle, and it feels good, folks. I actually spent my break back in D-Town, where I grew up on the west side. It was great seeing my family and friends who I hadn't seen in quite some time, especially some of my college buddies who are working all across the nation. I had buddies that actually a lot of them in Chicago, who are engineers out there and have different professions out there, and they were in town. Even one of my best friends, Johnny, who lives out in Arizona, he flew in for the holidays, got a chance to see him for a day, which was great. But just a good time, good vibes whenever you go home for the holidays or for any occasion at that. Even my grandfather, not a lot of people know this, but my mom, she's born and raised in Trinidad and Tobago. All right, the Caribbean, right? Beautiful place, beautiful place. My mom came here when she was 19, met my father in California, and they, of course, came back to Detroit, and here I am, right? But my grandfather from Trinidad, who still lives there, he was with us for the holidays, actually still is. He's staying with my mom for at least another week, and I got a chance to kick it with him and see him and catch up with him. But just a great time, folks, just being back home. And then, of course, last week, a bit of a vacation from the vacation, I guess you can say, both business and pleasure. Isaac Constance, our regular Current Sports engineer, him and I, we both flew out to Dallas, Texas to cover the Cotton Bowl, Michigan State versus Alabama. Of course, many of you, if not all of you out there, tuned in to that game on ESPN on New Year's Eve before popping off with your New Year's Eve festivities. And you guys witnessed a complete, just ugly game. Ugly game. I don't think anyone out there would have called an Alabama victory like that. Many of you, we predicted, actually, before we hit the break, I predicted, Isaac and I both predicted that Michigan State would lose that game, which ruffled the feathers of a few Spartan fans out there, so I'm told. But, you know, just keeping it real, I thought Alabama was going to win the game. Now, did I think they would win 38 to nothing? Come on. I don't think anybody expected that, okay? But if there was a team that was going to trounce Michigan State like that, it was going to be Alabama. This is Alabama we're talking about, folks. This is a team that is just on another stratosphere when it comes to what they do in college football. Nick Saban, hats off to the man. No matter what perception you may have of him, when evaluating his tenure at Michigan State or his tenure at LSU or his tenure in the pros, a brief one with the Miami Dolphins, the man knows what he's doing, folks. He is a brilliant head coach, and now Saban is 9-0 against former assistants. Of course, Mark D'Antonio, during that time period where Nick Saban was the head coach of the Michigan State football team from 1995 to 1999 as the cornerbacks coach, DB's coach, I should say. You know, he's now 2-0 against Coach D with a total score when looking at those two matchups. Again, as you heard in my postgame report, and speaking of that report, you know, I want to shout out the players who we talked to during that report. The voices you heard in that piece were Joe Heath, Riley Bulla, Darian Harris, Arjun Calhoun, Demetrius Cox, Jack Conklin, and last but not least, Malik McDowell. Those are a few of the respective players that we chatted in the locker room with, a very depressing one at that. But you know, going back to 2011, now Nick Saban has beaten Mark D'Antonio by a score of 87-7. Just one touchdown is what the Michigan State football team has scored against Alabama in those two games that they have met now in bowl competition. Really mind-blowing. Really mind-blowing. Again, I reiterate the fact, even though this was a 38-0 loss to Alabama, Michigan State season was a success, folks. Let's not kid ourselves here. I mean, again, this is Alabama we're talking about. I mean, I think if anything, and again, you're going to hear this dialogue from here until bowl season of next year, folks. When looking at this game, the Big Ten versus the SEC, Michigan State representing the Big Ten, the cream of the crop of the Big Ten, going against Alabama, who is the cream of the crop of the SEC, and not posting any points, you're going to have to hear this dialogue now that the SEC is clearly the dominant conference in college football. And I have to agree with them. It's hard not to agree with that statement when looking at what took place on New Year's Eve in the Cotton Bowl, folks. I mean, Michigan State didn't score a point against Alabama. And going back to 2011, they barely scored a touchdown in that one. So for me, it's hard to go against that notion because the proof is in the pudding, folks. Don't get me wrong. The Big Ten had a great year. A great year. And Michigan State is a very good team that deserved to play in the college football playoff. They deserve to be among one of those four teams like Arjun Calhoun talked about. And again, you know, looking at this is just the infancy years of this whole college football playoff thing. You know, Michigan State, one of only eight teams to be a part of the college football playoff in just 2 years of its existence is pretty impressive, okay? This was a very, very successful Michigan State football year and a very, very good Michigan State football team. But Alabama, talent-wise, is just on another level. I want to bring up a few things here before we get to your calls. Again, our phone lines are open up until 2 p.m. as customary here on the show. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I do believe we have Wayne on the phone. Wayne, I'm going to get you in just a second. Let me just get a few of these things off my chest here. Just putting a few things in perspective here. This is the first shutout loss of Mark D'Antonio's tenure. The first shutout loss of the Michigan State football program since that 14-0 Michigan loss back in the early 2000s. Bama held Michigan State to a season low 239 yards. Linebackers Reggie Ragland, defensive end Jonathan Allen, they just simply had their way with Michigan State's offensive line, folks. I mean, that was really the premise of that game. If there was an X factor in this game, it was that Michigan State offensive line against that stout Alabama defensive line. And we even walked by the team, both teams actually, right before kickoff. And what stood out to me, walking past Alabama's linemen, I thought I was walking past the Dallas Cowboys, okay? I really had to do a double take. I mean, those are some big boys. Some big boys. And that offensive line certainly had its hands full trying to contain them that entire game, which they simply couldn't. It was just another level. There's levels to this thing, and that was just another level, folks. Four sacks and six tackles for a loss when evaluating what that Alabama defensive line was able to do. And, you know, Jake Coker, hey, man, I must say, at the very beginning of the year, I was not sold on Jake Coker as the starting quarterback for the Alabama Crimson Tide. It was a bit shaky, a bit rocky, but Jake Coker, folks, has gotten better every single week that he has played. And it culminated in Arlington, Texas at AT&T Stadium against the Spartans. 25 of 30. Unbelievable. For 286 yards. And he had a love connection with Calvin Ridley, wide receiver for the Crimson Tide, all night long. Eight catches for Calvin. 138 yards. And, of course, two touchdowns. Including that one touchdown, which was just... And I think Calvin is going to be an unbelievable pro. I mean, he's so athletic. And I think what really puts in perspective how talented Ridley is was looking at that one touchdown throw from Coker to Ridley in the end zone, in which initially the referees had ruled it out of bounds. They didn't think he got a foot down. But when they reviewed it, it was challenged and they reviewed it, Ridley catches the football. Jermaine Edmondson, right on his heels, actually had an arm lodged in between Ridley's chest and the ball itself. Jermaine tries to dislodge the football, but Calvin Ridley, he holds on to it and then has enough awareness to plant a foot down just before stepping out of bounds. The kid is a monster, folks. Kid is a monster. And how about Cyrus Jones, who intercepted Connor Cook? Really was the turning point in the game for me, because I really thought MSU was in the game up until this point. Connor Cook started to get into a bit of a rhythm. And I'm sitting there saying to myself, okay, this is when Michigan State finally gets on the board. This is when they start to challenge Alabama. And Cyrus Jones picks off Connor Cook in the end zone. It was an underthrow to Aaron Burbridge. And then he not only does that, but he also had a 57-yard punt return for a touchdown, which really busted the game wide open. There was really no hope for the Spartans after that. And, you know, I was up there in the press box. I was sitting next to Fred Heumann from Channel 6 here in the area. Also, Jamie Edmonds from Fox 2 News, and next to her, Jennifer Hammond, well, excuse me, of WDIV Channel 4 News in Detroit, excuse me. And next to her was Jennifer Hammond of Channel 2 News in Detroit. And we're all sitting there saying, you know, we were looking at our view from the press box. We were also looking at the game broadcast, which they also had with the countless TVs that were there at AT&T Stadium in the press box. And they showed a picture on the broadcast. I'm pretty sure many of you guys saw this who were watching the game. They showed a picture on the broadcast of Connor Cook on the sidelines once he threw that interception. He had his helmet off and was just sitting there. And he had just a total face of just distraught. He was just distraught, folks. Like, his confidence had been ripped out of his heart and was just kind of sitting there saying, I don't know what to do. He just looked kind of dazed and confused. And that was the moment for me where I said, okay, I think I may start, you know, to write my stand up here, because Cook just looks completely out of it. That was the turning point of the game for me. His confidence just went totally out the window from there. So again, from my standpoint, it was just a clear line between the SEC and the Big Ten. Alabama is just so good, folks. So good. Michigan State running the ball had 26 rushes for just 29 yards. Really unbelievable stuff. I want to hear from you guys, though, because I want to know what the perception is when it comes to how this MSU football year will be looked at. Let's go to our phone lines right now. On line one, we have Ray from Indiana. My man, Ray. First off, my man, Happy New Year, Ray.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you, my friend. I've been trying to get a hold of you for a couple weeks. I didn't realize you weren't taking phone calls the last couple weeks.
Yeah, well, we've been away on vacay, and we've been rolling in best of shows. This is actually our first live show in 2 weeks, Ray. So welcome to the show, my man.
Yeah, they were hanging up on me. I was wondering what was going on. Hey, going to that game, you lost that game up front. Their big defensive line and offensive line was just pushing you around.
Yeah, that's what I just said, Ray. Exactly.
But the biggest
play
was a 10-0. You finally get a good drive together, and Connor Cook's a senior, okay? I'm not trying to pick on him too much, but he's got a first and goal at the 11-yard line. Almost, he could have got a first down on the – but it was first and 10, okay, on the 11-yard line. He throws that ball into double coverage. He had no business throwing that ball. He should have threw that ball away and tried another down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he definitely should have. And I don't care what anyone says, Ray. When evaluating Connor Cook later on in the year, in the later parts of the year, and even, of course, that game against Alabama at the Cotton Bowl,
right,
I don't believe that Connor Cook was 100% healthy, despite what he says. I mean, he was wearing an arm brace the entire game. It still looked to me that Connor Cook had some ways to go as far as that right shoulder healing, because that was a clear underthrow. It was just an inaccurate throw, something that we saw throughout the entire game.
It had to be a perfect pass because it was double cover. There was a guy behind him.
Exactly.
There was a guy in front of him.
Right.
That's how he picked it off. But he had three or four balls that sailed on him, and he never used to do that when he played Michigan.
Well, exactly. He was healthy then. He was certainly healthy then. So
that was the difference. There was something wrong with him. I don't know. But let's go on to the Bullies. They beat Florida up good, but you know what? Sir, they were supposed to play LSU. You know Jeff Long, the guy that runs the college football playoff?
Right, exactly, yeah.
He's the one that matches all the bowls up. He used to be at the University of Michigan, and I called him down there three times. He hung up on me, just like all the other bullies did. And I knew he'd line them up with Florida, who didn't have a quarterback. If they'd have took on LSU, that guy that run for five touchdowns, that running back.
Yeah, Leonard Fournette, right.
He'd have ran all over Michigan.
Yeah,
so they lined up the right, like Michigan always does. I'm going to give them credit. They won the game. They killed them. But if they'd have played LSU, it would have been a totally different game.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, Ray. I mean, I think at the end of the day, you know, Michigan getting that, well, I think it was like 41-7.
Right. 41-7.
Yeah, complete trounce of Florida.
I knew they were in trouble at halftime. When I left at halftime to go get something to eat, I knew that the bullies were going to beat them up bad. That coach came on there, and they had just, it was 14-7, and that quarterback ran the ball out of bounds, first and goal at the 10. He throws the ball up for grabs, and he gets it picked off, an interception at halftime. The coach says, what's going on with your team? You're getting pushed all over the field. He said, oh, we'll make some adjustments. We'll sling the ball around. He didn't know that it was a first and goal at the 10. I'm thinking, my God, you can't tell your quarterback. The quarterback doesn't know it's first and goal, and he's throwing the ball up like he thought it was fourth down.
Right, right, right.
That's crazy. That coach there for Florida, they ought to fire him. They got too much talent to get beat up like that by Michigan.
Yeah, it was a very talented Florida team, and a pretty good season for them overall on both sides of the spectrum. But at the end of the day, I think that, you know, as far as looking at U of M's football year, I mean, it's got to be considered a success. I mean, they haven't played in the bowl game since the Hulk era. Jim Harbaugh comes in his first year.
In bowl games, you just don't know which team's going to show up. Michigan State didn't show up at all, and Florida didn't show up at all. When you got 30, 40 days off, one team gets up for the game, and the other one usually don't, and that's the way it usually goes.
Right. Very true. Hey, Ray. Happy New Year, my man. Thanks a lot for the call.
One other thing. Tom Brady and the Lion Cheaters got beat again. One more loss in the playoffs, and then, Tom, you're going to have to pay your price when the court overturns that decision,
We'll definitely see. Well, they have a first-round bye, I know, and they will play the winner of the Pittsburgh Steelers and Cincinnati Bengals game. I'm excited the NFL playoffs are here, right?
Yeah, I am too, because I want to watch Tommy get beat up again.
Ray. Bye-bye. All right, my man Ray. Oh, boy, got to love Ray, right? Again, folks, phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But also, I have a brief, before we hit this first break, a brief bone to pick with the NCAA, though. And, you know, I actually read an article that centered on this very topic from Graham Couch of the Lansing State Journal. He expressed exactly what was on my mind last week when just looking at how the college football playoff decided to have both semifinal matchups on New Year's Eve. And the proof is in the pudding, folks. I don't know if you guys have seen the ratings from both the Michigan State, Alabama, and Clemson and Oklahoma game, but they are down. They are down 36% from where they were last year. Last year, the college football playoffs garnered around a 15.5 rating overall. This year, just a mere 9. Like, are you kidding me? And I don't get why the college football playoff decided to put these semifinal games on New Year's Eve when knowing that if you aren't a diehard fan of the four teams participating, you aren't going to be glued to your television to check out who is going to go to the national championship, folks. I'm pretty sure, especially when they're blowouts. I mean, it was amazing to me when looking at how Five of the six New Year's Six games that were on television. Of course, the sixth one, of course, will be the championship game, which will take place on the 11th of this year. But just look at these scores. I mean, in the Peach Bowl, Houston, 38, Florida State, 24, Ohio State, 44, Notre Dame, 28, Stanford trounces Iowa, 45-16 in the Rose Bowl. In the Sugar Bowl, Ole Miss completely trounces on Oklahoma State, 48-20. And then you had in the semifinals, now, of course, Alabama destroys MSU, and then Clemson beats Oklahoma 37-17. Not really entertaining football when evaluating those New Year's Six games, folks. Who is going to be glued to their television? It's New Year's Eve, first off. When evaluating the semifinal games, it's New Year's Eve. People have plans. People want to go to parties. People gather around. They're not going to be glued to their television watching a Clemson or Oklahoma game or an Alabama or Michigan State game. Will it be on TV? Yeah, maybe. You know, if you're not a diehard college football fan, though, you aren't going to be sitting there watching every down of every single play. And the proof is in the pudding. I don't know why the College Football Playoff Committee doesn't just put these games on the first Saturday of the new year. What is going on the first Saturday of the new year? Yeah, you keep the tradition of having Saturday college football, one, and two, folks are kind of just trying to, you know, wind down from the celebration of New Year's Eve. They can just kind of chill out and watch football all day. I guarantee those ratings would have been better if they put those games on a different slate, a different time slate. I just did not understand that. And again, it just goes to the arrogance of the, it speaks to the arrogance of the NCAA. They think they run the world. They think this is going to be a New Year's Eve tradition to watch these games, and the ratings are going to be continually high. Eh, you got this one completely wrong, NCAA, and it needs to change. We'll continue to break down this game. Again, we're going to be chatting with Isaac Constance, current sports engineer, who, again, is still on vacation out in New Orleans, but he's going to call in and give his thoughts on his experience out in Dallas, Texas. Again, we'll continue to take your calls. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports.
Geopolitics in the new year.
You know, our top risk from 2015 was the politics of Europe. We've seen that play out with the refugees, the terrorist attacks, and I don't see any fix to that in 2016.
The biggest geopolitical risks of 2016. That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International.
The Takeaway, today at 3 on AM 870 WKAR.
Next time on To The Point, although the 2016 campaign may feel endless, it's now 1 month until the Iowa caucuses launch the start of presidential voting. But that's more than enough time for a shakeup, especially in the GOP race. Will all those people showing up at Donald Trump rallies actually turn out to vote? That's next time on To The Point from Public Radio International.
To The Point, this afternoon at 2 on AM 870 WKAR.
Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Of course, right now we are discussing the Michigan State Cotton Bowl loss to the hands of the Alabama Crimson Tide. Of course, Alabama will now move on to play Clemson, who had a convincing victory over Oklahoma that same day just before kickoff of the Michigan State and Alabama game. The championship game will take place in Glendale, Arizona. Kickoff is set for 8:30 p.m. That's the championship game on January 11th. But it was a great time out in Dallas, folks. That was my first time actually going to Texas and experiencing the stadium that is AT&T Stadium, home of the Dallas Cowboys. For you guys out there who are longtime listeners of the show, you all know that I'm a big Dallas Cowboys fan. So for me, it was, you know, it was business, but also pleasure being down there because I got to check out Jerry World. That's what they dub AT&T Stadium. It's the most beautiful stadium in all of the U.S. of A, folks. I mean, my jaw completely dropped because we went there the day before. We got to check out the stadium the day before kickoff because we were doing a shoot. Again, which you can catch on Current Sports TV this week. I'll be chatting with former MSU running back Edwin Baker. We'll break down the game and you'll get his thoughts on what he's been up to now. But we shot our entire intro out there in Dallas, Texas. So we thought it'd be cool to show up a day early and do a shoot on the field as the maintenance crew painted the words Michigan State and Alabama in the respective end zones. Really cool stuff. One of the media relations guys out there invited us out there, and we did a shoot out there, put together a small package, a pregame package, if you will. And when we took the taxi to go there, and we were driving up to the stadium, it was unbelievable. First off, because Six Flags in Texas is right next to AT&T Stadium, and it looked like a mini spaceship almost. And then we get closer and we get out the taxi and you just look up at the stadium and it is ridiculously big. I mean, it's really hard to put into words, folks, just how enormous this stadium is. But, you know, everything's custom made because it is Jerry Jones. This is, quote unquote, America's team. This is a billion-dollar franchise. And, you know, you walk into the stadium and everything's customarily catered to the Cowboys brand. Brief story before we get to our caller and then Isaac here. Right before Isaac and I were about to start, about to walk into the elevators, there's a guy there, there's a worker there, and he pressed a button. He was going to show us to the field, right? He presses the button for the elevator. He calls the elevator, and he sees Isaac rolling the camera case because that's how our case is made with the camera that we were shooting with. And the guy immediately says, "Whoa, hold on. This is the Jerry Jones rule." And we're sitting there saying, "What are you talking about?" And he's like, anything that rolls on the ground or anything that you have to place on the ground, you have to carry it once you get in the elevators. So we're sitting there saying, okay, why is that? Well, of course, we respect the rule, but why is that so? And the guy looks at it and says, well, because Jerry Jones had the floor in the elevator imported from Italy. Folks, the elevator then opens and we look down and it is black marble. I kid you not, folks. So he doesn't want to scratch on his marble floors. And then, you know, we get into the elevator and he presses, you know, one of the buttons to go down to the field, and the button lights up in the shape of a blue star, of course, for the Cowboys. Just absolutely unbelievable. It just shows you, I mean, and then you get down to the field and there's suites lined up field level. They look like mini apartments. And then in each end zone, there's plush seating. Just an unbelievable stadium that I will never forget. Folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's go to line one right now. We have Tamia from Lansing on our phone lines. Tamia, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing pretty good. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Tamia.
Okay. I just wanted to say two things. The first thing I wanted to say is... when it comes to the Cotton Bowl, was that, I mean, even though it was an embarrassing loss, I think that we had like an awesome season, and I think that can't be taken away from us. That's one thing that I just wanted to say about the Spartans, because I mean, and all the people that had negative things to say, I mean, we was there, they weren't there. Mm-hmm. We made it that far. And so, like, we have to commend them for that. They had, like, an awesome, awesome season. But I remember calling you back when it was announced that they were going to play Alabama. And like I said, that we couldn't depend on miracles. We had to step our A game up, in which case that's something that we're just going to have to remember to do.
Right. Yeah, there's no – you don't beat Alabama by luck, right?
Right. And then just the other comment that I wanted to make, I just wanted to get your take on it because I know that you and me alike love the Dallas Cowboys.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I was watching the Lions and the Bears, and they was just saying that those two teams was pretty much playing to see what their fate would be for next season. And I just because with our Cowboys, it's like we talk about the Lions, but we pretty horrible. And I was just wondering. Like, as a fan, do you think that it's that time for us to take the same steps that the Lions took as far as when went in and just started cleaning things out? Do you think it's time for us to start doing something like that? I mean, because, like, really, how long can we wait as well? And it seems to be what puts the fire under them. So
yes.
I just wanted to get your take on that as a Cowboy fan.
Hey, thanks a lot for the call, Camille. And I totally agree with you. I mean, me, I'm from Detroit, born and raised in Detroit. So you have to have a certain affinity for the Detroit Lions. And then on top of that, I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan. So you guys can just imagine what my emotions were like watching this NFL season. But as far to address Camille's question, I mean, as far as the Cowboys go, they need to clean house. I don't think that Jason Garrett is the guy. I think that they need to add pieces to this team defensively because they are hurting when it comes to that secondary. As far as the offensive line goes, I think the Cowboys have the best offensive line in football. So that's some light there. But at the same time, at the quarterback position, and it's so ironic because you have the best offensive line in football, but yet Tony Romo is like glass. I mean, every time he hits the field, every season for the past 2 years now, he's gotten hurt in the same injury, that collarbone injury. So maybe, you know, the Dallas Cowboys, I don't know if you guys saw this, but the draft order after, of course, everything was said and done, the dust was settled on the NFL year, the draft order for the 2016 NFL draft was released, and the Dallas Cowboys do have the fourth overall pick. It goes Tennessee Titans, Cleveland Browns, San Diego Chargers, Cowboys, Jacksonville Jaguars, Baltimore Ravens, San Francisco 49ers, Miami Dolphins, Tampa Bay Bucks, and the New York Giants. That's how your top 10 looks right now. So at the end of the day, I think the Cowboys do need to add some pieces specifically when it comes to that either secondary or maybe even a running back or a backup QB. That's where my point of focus is right now. Folks, 517-355-9527. We've got Mike from Saginaw on the line who is shoveling snow. Is that right, Mike? That's what my headline says here.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. I was out there shoveling snow, man.
Oh, man. Winter is certainly here, right?
Yeah.
Is he still there? Hello, Mike?
Okay, then. I was going to ask you, man, did you see Concussion yet?
Yes, I saw it yesterday. How about that? My great timing. I saw it yesterday, yeah.
Man, because it's a great movie, man. It really is. Will Smith played the role, man. You got to give him props for that.
It was absolutely fantastic. And it kind of gives you a first-hand point of view and look into what Dr. Amalu went through when he discovered chronic traumatic encephalopathy. It was a really compelling film. Will Smith knocked it out the park. And we'll see if he can take home a Golden Globe for it. I know he's nominated for a Golden Globe from his role in that movie. It was unbelievable.
See, because those shows are depending on ratings, too. They want younger people to watch those war shows, so they're probably going to give him a Golden Globe for that, just to keep the people watching. You know, everything is ratings-driven, so.
He knocks that role out the park. He certainly does, Mike. And I think it also puts a really uncomfortable spotlight on the NFL that I think was needed. Even though I know Roger Goodell, he got painted as kind of not a good guy in that film. Check it out, though.
Oh, yeah. I was going to tell you, did you hear about the bowl games? The quality of the bowl games haven't been there this year. You
got to
admit that, man.
I mean, that's what I just mentioned, Mike. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, because I was thinking about TCU comeback. They made a big deal about them. They was down by 31 points, and they came back and won in triple overtime, man. But I just look at the crowds in the bowl games. Some of the bowl games are attended, and then there's other ones that don't have that attendance. It's like those cities who have, like, the Fiesta Bowl, Phoenix got them another bowl game, Miami got another bowl game, New Orleans got another bowl game, Texas. You know where I'm going with this. It's not besides the big six bowl games. They have a little minor league bowl game. And I wonder if, and it also is a lot of 5 and 7 teams in the bowl games and stuff. And I just want to know if they really figured they got a way to just to honor every football team that can at least be sub 500 or what. Give me your take on it.
Yeah, you know, Mike, as far as the quality of the bowl games, and I just went on a rant about how when looking at the New Year's Six, I mean, they weren't entertaining. I mean, every single game of the New Year's Six was a blowout. And I watched that TCU an Oregon game, again, and Alamo Bowl out in San Antonio, Texas. What an unbelievable game, though. What a comeback from TCU. That was one of the more entertaining games of the entire bowl slate. But I think at the end of the day, I mean, sometimes, you're talking about like bowl games like the GoDaddy Bowl, and you have the Heart of Dallas Bowl, you know, the Russell Athletic Bowl. I mean, it's the Music City Bowl. It gets to a point where it's like bowl overload, and a lot of these bowls really don't mean anything at the end of the day. So I think it's too many, if you ask me, Mike.
Do you think like a Big Ten, like a conference like a Big Ten, should have that many teams in bowl games? Really, they had seven teams on the Big Ten.
If they're deserving,
4 or 5.
If they're deserving, okay. At the end of the day, Mike, because especially I harp on Iowa in this discussion because Iowa certainly deserved to play, even though they got trounced by Stanford 45-16. Iowa deserved to be in a big bowl like the Rose Bowl because they had such an incredible season with only one loss on that record. Again, that one loss came to Michigan State, a team that played in the college football playoff.
Is you amazed? Here's my last question. I'll let you move on with your show. Is you amazed how Jake Rudolph really played for Michigan from the beginning of the season to the end of the season and kind of cooked the same way?
What was the question about comparing Cook to Rudolph?
Yeah, Rudolph, Michigan's quarterback. Do you think both of them they got better during the season or they just?
Oh, certainly. Well, as far as Cook goes, I mean, I think he would have stayed on pace of being. I think his draft stock did get hurt in this game. I will say that because I mean, big stage college football playoff and. really couldn't do anything. Now, the logical college football fan will put in perspective that Cook wasn't healthy. And also, an offensive line could not contain Alabama's defensive line. I think Cook is a fantastic quarterback. Do I think he's a first rounder? Without a doubt. But if you put up that type of performance on that kind of stage, it's going to hurt your draft stock. But as far as if Cook didn't get hurt, oh, I think Cook would have been certainly putting up consistent numbers that we saw throughout much of this year. Jake Rudock, certainly he got better as the year went on. But as far as their draft stock is concerned, I may put Cook maybe later in the first round or even maybe early second, something like that. Rudock, I think he may even fall maybe the third round or something like that. But as far as the overall performance, I do think they got better as the week goes on. Mike, we got to move on, though, but thanks a lot for your call, dude. And make sure you do a good job shoveling out there, man. Don't get hurt, all right?
I will. I'll do that.
Be safe,
thank
man.
You, man.
Happy
I'll
New
do
Year.
It.
Thanks a lot,
Mike. All right,
Mike.
Man. Thank you.
All right. And last but not least, finally, let's get to him. He's in New Orleans right now. Of course, our regular current sports engineer. He's off this week. He will be back here next week, Monday. But he is sharing a bit of his maxing, taxing, and relaxing with us here on today's show, our very first show of the new year. Isaac Constance. Isaac, how you doing, my man?
Great, Al. Thanks for having me a part of the first show of the new year. Shoveling snow. It's like y'all are in Michigan or something.
And you know, you won't rub it in our face here in Michigan because, of course, you being out in New Orleans, I'm just curious, what's the weather like, dude?
It's 50 degrees, sunny, not a cloud in the sky. Oh. Went for a nice walk this morning. No complaints, I gotta say. Not to rub it in, but it's pretty nice. Well, I'll take it.
I think you already rubbed it in. Too late on that one, Isaac. But thanks so much, man, for joining me. I just want to talk about, you know, I've talked a bit about my experience being at Jerry World. I want to kind of get your take on being out in Dallas, Texas, and of course, your take on the game. I mean, because you and I, we were both there together. We got in the same day. We left the same day as well. You did more sightseeing than I did while down there. I mean, I spent much of the much of my time there taking naps and catching up on a bit of rest due to the hectic travel schedule that many people had out there. But what was your time like in Dallas, man? What were your takeaways from just the city overall?
Well, like you said, first off, just Jerry World itself, AT&T Stadium, the grandeur, the opulence. Oh my gosh, everything was just done up to the max out there. Not only is it a big stadium, but as you mentioned, everything is so luxurious. Everything's really top-notch, and it's without doubt the best stadium I've ever been to. So that's outstanding. And it's also in a stadium district. The Texas Rangers stadium is also there. It's a really nice area of Arlington. And anyway, it really was a really cool experience for me. I love being in Texas. That was my second time being there. And in Texas, you do see a few cowboy hats and boots and everything like that. Definitely good old South. And then just the game itself, of course, was probably the only anticlimactic thing. And also, Al, both you and I heard you talking about the painting of the field ceremony. Mm. Boy, that took forever, huh?
Oh, my goodness. What we wanted to do, folks, was get footage of the Michigan State end zone getting painted. But we had no idea. We didn't know how. I mean, we kind of came in there like blind rats. We didn't know what was going to take place. But they actually did each end zone at a time. And we tried to wait as long as possible as we could, but the Alabama end zone took it, I don't know, hours. I mean, we got there, I believe, at like 6, something like that, and we left around 7:30, you know, and yeah. They were still working on the Alabama sideline. They didn't even get to the Michigan State side end zone, excuse me, by the time we decided to just pack it up and leave.
Yeah, finally know what watching paint dry is like, I guess. That's the benefit. So can't say I'll repeat that experience, but it was a great experience. And the Cotton Bowl itself, the Cotton Bowl is really a first-class organization in terms of the way they handle the media, handle the fans, everything. I think, personally, it might be because it's not one of the more established bowl games in the New Year's Six. You see that in the Peach Bowl, both really trying to, I think, make up and compensate for the fact that they might not have the history of some of the other bowl games.
Exactly, right.
They sure do with all the new advances, the great stadiums, and the way they treat their fans and the media.
Oh, they laid out the red carpet for the media. I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, the media room was extravagant. Of course, they had an arcade in the media room, and they had plush seats where you can sit down and relax. They even had an open bar every single night. I mean, it was absolutely unbelievable. And every media member actually got an Under Armour Cotton Bowl fleece, which was pretty sexy as well. Isaac, what was your takeaways from the game itself? And what do you think will be the overall perception of how this Michigan State football year played out?
Well, I said it before the game. I thought if Alabama scored more than 21 points, the game was over. I didn't think Michigan State could match that. Did I think they'd be shut out? Not even close. In fact, I thought MSU would keep it a low-scoring game and have a chance to win. And I was loving my prediction so far after the first half, or, yeah, the entire first half until Connor Cook threw that interception. So the game itself, though, you know, I've been shocked if Michigan State blew Alabama out, or not even shocked. That was never a possibility even. I thought this was in the cards. I didn't think it was the most likely draw, but at the same time, I thought it was a possibility. So what surprised me, though, was that not just competency, but how good Jake Coker actually was. Because Michigan State, that defensive line was able to contain Derrick Henry fairly well. Malik McDowell was a beast throughout the game. But Coker's passes opened up the rest of the offense. He was able to just thread the needle time and time again, make big plays. And that, of course, is how we know that the defense for MSU can be exploited. If you can target that secondary, make the safeties do a little bit too much work, then you can beat them deep. So that's what I saw from the game. And Cyrus Jones, he was one of my players to watch before the game, and he was really the difference maker by the fourth quarter. I mean, that interception and the punt return, both of those were, in my opinion, the two biggest plays of the game.
Yeah, without a doubt. And Coker was so good. Again, 25 of 30 for 286 yards. He was so good that really Derrick Henry, he was a factor still in this game, but not the factor that we were used to seeing him throughout much of the Crimson Tide season. I mean, he had 20 carries for 78 yards before that Cotton Bowl game. I mean, he was putting up video game numbers. But he was you know, he had two touchdowns. But really, Coker was so good with his arm that once Coker saw that he could pass on that Michigan State secondary, it was like blood in the water, and they just kept attacking Michigan State down the field. And also, you brought up Cyrus Jones. He was spectacular. Again, he intercepted Cook at that 57-yard punt return for a touchdown. Calvin Ridley, again, 8 catches, 138 yards, 2 touchdowns. Just a really impressive overall effort. And for this year, Isaac, again, Michigan State, I think, you know, you will have fans out there that will look at this game and say, okay, Michigan State still has a long way to go. At the end of the day, you know, MSU season ends with a third Big Ten championship in the past 6 seasons, third straight top 5 finish if it all plays out how we expect it to. What's your overall takeaway, and what do you think this season should be remembered for?
Well, I think there are a couple of dialogues to be had. One is about MSU. And when talking about MSU, I think Camille made a great point. I 100% agree with her that MSU was there while other teams were not. It's not like the MSU team played a cupcake schedule where they were able to avoid teams like Ohio State, Michigan. They were doubtless the best team in the Big Ten. They proved it throughout the season because they beat all the big dogs. But then I think the dialogue then shifts to, where does the Big Ten rank in terms of conferences now? Because the Big Ten, Michigan had a good showing against Florida, but the Iowa-Stanford game was really discouraging, if you ask me, because I thought that would be a nail-biter, a really close, maybe low-scoring affair.
Right.
And I think it comes back to that. Then, of course, Ohio State, though, had a good showing against Notre Dame. So the Big Ten's just been up and down this bowl season. But for MSU specifically, I think this season has to be looked at as a success. We talked about before the season, can MSU make the playoffs? That's the next step up. They did. They qualified for the Final Four. They did all they could in that aspect. And it's not to say that you can't keep making those incremental bits of progress by just stepping up the ladder, going to the playoff one year, then the championship a few years later, and then finally winning it. Eventually, that has to be the goal for this team. But they didn't need to make it happen this year. I think the season's still a success.
Yeah, without a doubt. And again, you're going to have those individuals who look at those results of those Big Ten games, and again, bringing up the Iowa loss to Stanford and Michigan State getting blown out against Alabama, and say that, yeah, there is a fine line. There is a big gap, I do believe, between the SEC and the Big Ten. I wouldn't say big. There's a gap. And depending on how who you are, the perception of how big that gap is varies. I do believe that. But there a gap certainly does exist, and we saw that throughout the weekend. Isaac, go ahead. Go back to sipping your pina colada, my man. We'll see you back here next week Monday, all right?
All right. Can't wait. See you then, Al. Bye.
All right. Isaac Constance, of course, our engineer here at Current Sports. Want to give a special shout-out to Drew Hill, who is filling in for Isaac throughout the week, my man. All right, let's hit a brief second break here. And when we come back, you'll get my brief thoughts on the NFL playoff picture. Yeah, don't miss that and so much more. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870.
The BBC World Service.
You're listening to the newsroom.
This is Clip.
Welcome to assignment.
Welcome to From Our Own Correspondent.
Hello and welcome to Global Business.
Welcome to Hard Talk.
Welcome to The Y Factor.
This is Science in Action.
Welcome to More or Less.
Welcome to Outlook.
It's time for Witness.
Hello and welcome along to The Arts Hour.
Great to have you on World Have Your Say.
Welcome to Sport Today.
BBC News.
The World Service from the BBC.
The BBC on AM 870 WKAR.
What if we could use fossil fuels without putting all that carbon into the atmosphere?
Bring the carbon up, use it, and put it back is the basic idea.
To fight climate change, researchers are exploring ways to trap carbon down here on Earth.
I can't wait to see what great minds come up with to reimagine CO2.
Technological approaches to climate change, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered today at 4 on 90.5 WKAR.
Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Only 3 minutes left in the show, and I would be remiss if I did not end today's show, or at least mention it throughout the show, and send our condolences here at WKAR to, of course, the MSU men's basketball coach Tom Izzo, who, of course, over the holiday break, his father passed away at the age of 90. Carl Izzo, the father of Tom, he passed away, and just a really trying time. I can only imagine what it's like to lose a parent. That's something that I have yet to experience, and it's one that I'm sure is very, very tough, and I can only imagine what Tom is going through. But thoughts and prayers and condolences go to Tom Izzo and, of course, his family. And I saw a really classy thing that was done over the break as well after the Iowa game, I believe, or actually it might have been the Minnesota or the Iowa game, but I did see that Denzel Valentine, he actually the Minnesota game, it was after the 69-61 win. Denzel Valentine, who of course is sitting out due to surgery on his knee, arthroscopic surgery on his knee, he presented the game ball after that Michigan State win over Minnesota to Tom Izzo, and he spoke from the heart and kind of, you know, let Tom know that the team is with him through this trying time. And, you know, just a really cool moment. I actually saw it on ESPN, and ESPN had it as like its fourth, you know, top headline on the website. And it's a pretty cool picture with Denzel and Tom looking down at the basketball and Denzel with his right arm on Tom's shoulder. But thoughts and prayers go out to Tom during this trying time. And the MSU men's basketball team, as far as what they're doing, I mean, they're 14-1 on the year. They get a great win against Minnesota. Again, the Big Ten home opener for the team will be this Thursday when they take on and they host Illinois. So we will, of course, be at that game providing coverage for that. Brief thought, you know, that I'll carry over to tomorrow's show. The Detroit Lions finishing the year 7-9. I think you got to keep Jim Caldwell for another year. I will say that. We'll break down the playoff picture for tomorrow and so much more. Don't miss tomorrow's show, folks. But as far as today's show is concerned, again, much thanks to Drew Hill for filling in as engineer, as he will be throughout this entire week here on WKAR's Current Sports. Thank you to all of you out there for tuning in to today's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. We'll see you back here same time, same place. Be easy, people.